My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. Ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
More Than a Movie is back with season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Math and Magic, a production of iHeartRadio.
I think at the core, what I get excited about, what gets me up in the morning, is connecting with people. In an unscripted, unvarnished way, is getting to say something to them, hear back from them, know that I'm part of the routine, and I look forward to getting on the air.
Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. I'm Bob Pittman, and on this episode, we're going to chat with one of the world's most famous workaholics, often called the hardest working person in showbiz. He covers the spectrum. Host, producer, promoter, owner of radio and TV shows, events and products, entrepreneur, investor, and a generous philanthropist. He's best known for his long-running stint as the host of American Idol. He's on season 22. And 20 years with us at iHeart, the iconic morning personality on LA's Kiss FM and on air with Ryan Seacrest on over 100 radio stations nationwide. Ryan is an almost Christmas baby from Atlanta, Georgia, but is probably best known as part of the Hollywood establishment for decades. Most people we talk to on Math and Magic had a childhood ambition that got disrupted for the path they eventually took. Not Ryan. He has done what he originally dreamed of doing, and then some. He has impeccable instincts, plus the organizational skills and discipline to bring them to life. The Kardashians, New Year's Eve on ABC, 6 years of Live with Kelly and Ryan, American Top 40, the iHeartRadio Music Festival, and coming soon, he takes over as the host of the legendary Wheel of Fortune. Plus, he's on the radio every morning, no matter what. How does he do it all and why? We'll dig into that in a few minutes. He's also, by the way, a great guy and a good friend. Ryan, welcome. Congrats and thanks for 20 years at iHeart.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here, Bob, my fellow Capricorn friend.
Before we jump into the meaty topics, I want to do you in 60 seconds. You ready?
Okay, great.
Do you prefer cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Early riser or night owl?
Early riser.
New York or Los Angeles?
Bi-coastal.
Coke or Pepsi?
Coca-Cola, Atlanta boy here.
Rock and roll or country?
Country.
Coffee or tea?
So much black coffee.
Reality TV or TV dramas?
reality TV.
Cook or eat out?
Cook and eat out. But I cook.
Radio or TV?
Well, are you the chairman of iHeart? Radio. And I like TV.
Comedy or drama?
Drama.
Selfie or autograph?
Autograph.
This is going to get really hard. All-time favorite music artist?
Frank Sinatra.
First job?
Radio.
Favorite TV show from your childhood?
Growing Pains, The Love Boat, Beverly Hills 90210. I can't choose.
Smartest person you know?
My father.
Childhood hero?
I'm my father as well.
Favorite sport to watch?
Football.
Favorite city?
Atlanta, New York, Los Angeles, Miami, and all of my affiliates.
Favorite place to visit?
Italy.
And secret talent?
We're still searching.
Okay, let's jump in. Anytime I talk with anyone about you, the first words out of their mouth are, he's a great guy. No one ever calls you temperamental talent. How did you navigate all you've done and not turn into the Hollywood prima donna?
Well, I'm flattered to hear that people say that when I'm not around. I think for me, it's just honesty and simple. This is what I always wanted to do. I dreamt of doing what I get to do every single day. And I remind myself of how it felt when I didn't do it. And that drive, that fire I had in my belly beforehand. And so to have the privilege of doing it every day, I remind myself to be grateful and treat it in such a way.
So how has being a good, reasonable guy helped your career?
Well, I think people appreciate relationships in any business, especially in our business. I think people appreciate kindness and authenticity. And I hope to think that people who I've met and didn't have an opportunity to do something with right away, later we came back and we were eventually able to collaborate because we maintained a good, friendly, kind relationship.
Although I read a long list of things you do, the truth is that that's just a sampling of all you do. Did you intend to do all those things, or did it just sneak up on you?
I never intended to do all of those things. I wanted to move to Los Angeles when I was growing up in Atlanta. I had a dream to do that when I was a teenager. I made that dream come true when I was 19, still a teenager. I studied the work of Merv Griffin, Dick Clark, both guys who had a radio and TV career, and both entrepreneurs and both asset owners and both very, very smart, but also very good presenters on air. And I watched how they maneuvered the skills of business and the skills of performance and what that intersection was for them. And in my head, I thought, okay, if I could take baby steps towards those paths, maybe it would be the career that I'm looking for and be fulfilling to me. But I didn't know how it would all come together. I didn't know what the pieces of the puzzle necessarily would be.
Simple question here on your personality. Do you love complexity? And what happens to you if you don't have enough to do?
Maybe I love complexity, but I also love simplicity in the form of efficiency. When I was growing up, I was always very, very busy and hustling and rushing to the next thing. And at the time, that was, you know, I played football, believe it or not, as a kid. And so we get up early, we go to the weight room before class, we go to class, we go to practice afterwards. Then after that, there'd be a 4-H meeting or some sort of club we'd have to go to. And I remember my days being filled and loving that sort of velocity in the day. And I think I conditioned myself to thrive on motion and movement and create emotion from that kind of motion. And so as an adult, and as I put my professional life together, I thought, how can I, if given the opportunity, do multiple things, probably because I also have the fear of all of it going away at some point, but do multiple things in the most efficient way so that it can be stacked into a morning, an afternoon, an evening, a day, a week, and create a formula that allows me to jump into different roles, which I find very exciting.
So do you think of your schedule as hectic or stimulating?
Well, when I read it, it's hectic. But then when I get into it, I do find it exhilarating and stimulating. And I prefer and I like the momentum, the schedule that I keep.
Does it propel you through the day?
It does propel me through the day. I've also gotten better. You know, as the years go by, you know, you start to chip off a little wisdom, and I have gotten better understanding balance. I used to carry a lot of guilt, Bob, when I wasn't working. So, for example, if I had a Saturday and I was going to the beach with some friends, I felt a little guilt. Like, why am I not trying to get that big break? Or why am I not trying to leverage what I'm doing into something else? And I remember going on vacations with my family, with my parents, with my sister, when I was in my early 20s. And I always have my phone with me. And my mom and dad say, why do you have that phone with you? Well, in case the program director of the radio station needs me or calls me or wants me to come back to do a shift because somebody is sick, I want to be able to do that. And so I carried that with me for a long time. But now I've gotten to the place where I do believe in full focus and work and preparation in the hours and blocks that I'm in production. But I also believe in really expanding my horizon when it comes to things that I love to do with wellness, food, the hobbies that I'm into.
Almost every career is enabled by one unlikely or improbable stroke of luck somewhere in the process. For me, it was the jump from minimum wage, part-time radio announcer in Brookhaven, Mississippi, to programming the station and being on the air at the big NBC-owned radio station in Chicago just 5 years later. What was yours and how did it happen?
One that I think about now and hone in on is the big break of being the host of American Idol. This came at a time when I was 26, 7 years old. I was on the radio in Los Angeles doing afternoon drive. I'd been on television a little bit and gotten some good experience, but nothing at the level with the impact of what was about to come. And initially, I met with the producers and I was considered as a judge for American Idol. And during the meeting with those executive producers, I started asking about the host and they said, well, you can audition for the host if you want. So I auditioned to be the host of American Idol. After the audition that night, they told me that I got the job and we start shooting the next day. Literally the next morning we started shooting. We were doing auditions, Simon, Randy, Paula. We were meeting in Hollywood to do the auditions for the first season of the show that had never been on the air. This was at the time, Bob, you probably remember this, when people were saying music does not work on TV.
Right.
Remember that?
Well, I remember those stories. I know those people.
We know those people well. It did work on TV. It started to become this massive, massive event on television. And that was a moment that I thought to myself, wow, I'm lucky here, right? Like, I got into this. I'm lucky. This is going to be a ride. How do I take this momentum and turn it into something bigger at the same time? And that's when we started having conversations with the management for American Top 40 and Kiss FM and the other things that you mentioned at E, where I went and hosted E! News and the red carpet shows and produced series for them. So I would say being the host of that singing competition show opened the door for all the things that came to fruition.
How did you even get the audition?
That was one that, you know, in Hollywood, you have representation and the agents call and say they're looking for a host for this show. The audition was pretty interesting. The audition was at the Fox lot in front of the executives in a meeting room. And all they did was say, okay, here's a scenario. A contestant just lost a family member. They sang an emotional song. They're crying. You need to talk to them and turn to the camera and get us to commercial break in 30 seconds with finesse. Go.
Wait a minute. You can't leave us hanging. What did you say? How did you handle that?
I can't remember exactly how or what I said, but I do remember thinking, okay, this is a moment to slow down and not say too much. That's the other thing that I've learned. And of course, this is an audio format, so we're talking a lot. But another thing that I learned hosting was just listening is the best thing you can do when being a host. It's just to listen. So I think I listened, and maybe that's what they saw.
So you started as your foundation as an on-air radio personality. You still do it today. Mornings on the legendary Kiss FM in Los Angeles, American Top 40. You're syndicated on air with Ryan Seacrest on over 100 stations nationwide, plus one of the top shows on the iHeartRadio digital app. Why the love of radio? And after all your success across all media, why is radio still so important to you?
Love the connection to people. I think at the core, what I get excited about, what gets me up in the morning, is connecting with people in an unscripted, unvarnished way. Is getting to say something to them, hear back from them, know that I'm part of the routine. And I look forward to getting on the air. I look forward to it. Just last night, I went to dinner. I eat very early. I went to dinner very early. I was trying to get into a restaurant. It was 5:30, the first reservation. I was there at 5:12. I was sitting outside. It wasn't open. And I was standing on the curb, and I'm texting the co-hosts of my morning show, you know, just sort of saying, hey, this is kind of funny. Let's talk about this tomorrow, that I'm always the one standing outside waiting for a place to open, and I can't wait to get in there and get out in 42 minutes. And so in my mind, I'm thinking about the next day's show because I just love to get up and connect and have that conversation on a regular basis. That's the other thing about the radio shows. And I've done it almost every day since I was 14 years old. I'm now not 14. But there's just something about the fluidity, about the autonomy of conversation, of content, of topics that we get to have in the radio show that's just real and hopefully relatable. I love that. And I love, you mentioned Wheel of Fortune. I haven't done it yet, but I think I'm going to love the opportunity to connect with three people every night, meet three people from across the country, get to know them for a half hour, and give away some money and maybe a car, you know, cash and prizes. That's what drives me.
Advertisers love being on your show, and they really love your endorsements. Talk about how you think about that and how you interact with sponsors.
Well, we have done this together for a long time, you and I. And I truly believe, and I realize this, that the sales department and the partnership with our advertisers and clients, that's what fuels the platform. That's what allows us as personalities, influencers, to get up every day and have a place to talk and have a beacon, right? Without the advertisers, we wouldn't be able to do what we do. So there's a lot of value in our relationship with them. And what's most important to me is when an advertiser wants to be on one of our programs, is to understand what they're trying to accomplish. And we've asked them before in meetings that you and I have been in together, what will move the needle for you? Not just getting on the air and talking about something, but what really will make change, or what really is a success for you for this product, for this campaign, for this season. And that's helpful. You get really clear answers and have a very clear path to success with an advertiser when you understand what a win is for them. And I love to have that dialogue.
Most people on the radio would love to have your success. You're the top of the heap. What do you think makes great on-air talent, and what advice would you give to anyone who wants to be you?
It's difficult for me to give advice because everybody is so different and everybody's got, you know, their own skill set. For me, I don't have a talent. I don't have a skill set per se, except I love to go. I love to prepare. I do take it seriously while having fun. But preparation is a big thing for me that I can control. When I was a baby DJ, people who were wiser than I said, you know, you got to have a point of view and you've got to be a good communicator with that point of view and be your genuine self. And when I was young and starting out, that was impossible to do because I had imposter syndrome because I was 18 trying to play 35 and always wanting to sound like I fit in. But I do think that the preparation is key. Having fun while taking it seriously and being kind is a good formula.
I remember when you first told us about the opportunity to do the live TV show each day with Kelly and explaining how you could get off the air in New York and then do your daily radio show in Los Angeles. And I admit, you and I've talked about it before, I was skeptical. I couldn't imagine that anyone could handle that schedule. And oh, by the way, squeeze in American Idol. But you did, and ratings actually went up on your radio show. Live with Kelly and Ryan was a top daytime show on TV, and Idol was also a smash. And you're not stopping. So after six seasons, you've moved on from the daily TV show to step into one of the most legendary roles on TV, replacing Pat Sajak as the host of Wheel of Fortune. Tell us why and how that happened.
Well, to think about that meeting with you, I don't get nervous too much. I was a little nervous about that meeting, right? Because I had to come in sounding pretty confident that I could pull it all off, even if I wasn't quite sure if I could. And thank goodness it did work. And, you know, those 6 years with Kelly Ripa were amazing 6 years. She is such a brilliant talent. She made me better. Sitting next to her raised my game. You kind of have to. She's just that good. And she can carry any conversation anywhere at any time, at any second it's thrown at her on live television. And that's a show that has no script. And I will tell you, One of the things I loved about that show having no script was because I had so many years of radio experience where we don't have a script. And that made it fun. It's a little bit like doing a morning show, Bob, on TV, right? The two of us sitting there talking about what we did last night. And after traveling back and forth from Los Angeles to New York a lot over the years, it felt like a good time to try something else. The opportunity for Wheel of Fortune came up. Fortunately, we made that deal. No one will ever do what Pat Sajak has done. He's a legend who had hosted that show for so many years. I mean, the episodes, record-breaking episodes. And he became a companion and a good friend to a lot of people in their living rooms every single night with Vanna and me too. So for me, it's a show that I know this country loves. I know it's got a special place in a lot of people's hearts because it's generational. They grew up with it. Maybe they learned something from it. Maybe they got together with their kids to watch it. I like that in a show. I like that it's fun, it's lighthearted, and at the end of it, you make people really happy. And at this stage in my career, that's exciting. To do it in the 7 to 8 time period is exciting, and I kind of can't wait to get on the air. That starts in September.
More on Math and Magic right after this quick break.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
More Than a Movie is back with season 2 of the award-winning film podcast, and this time with a lot more movies. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and each week I'm going to talk to the people behind some of my favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the OG spy kid, Alexa Penavega.
You had Carlo Gugino, who's the coolest mom ever. You had Antonio, who's handsome, amazing, charismatic. And then Carmen and Junie. I felt like a lot of other kids felt like this could be me.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Every episode will feature interviews with the biggest actors, directors, writers, and producers behind your favorite films and tap into the history of Latinos in film. Listen to More Than a Movie as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Math and Magic. Let's hear more from my conversation with Ryan Seacrest. So let's go back in time. I want to put you in context. You were born in Atlanta, Georgia, a very tight and supportive family, still have it. Can you paint the picture of that time and place when you were growing up?
Oh, yeah. This is when I fell in love with radio. I can smell the grass when I was mowing the lawn with a Toro rear-propelled lawnmower. And I was listening at the time on my water-resistant yellow Sony Walkman to American Top 40 hosted by Casey Kasem. And I pictured all of the artists he was playing. I pictured him being in his studio in Hollywood, the glamour of it all. And I just thought, wow, this is super cool that I'm listening in Atlanta to something coming out of Hollywood about the biggest artists in the top 40. And that's when I started to dream about doing it. That's when I started to make tapes pretending I was Casey Kasem. And I'd go up into my bedroom and I'd count down the hits from coast to coast, as he would say. and make audio tapes with songs for my mom and dad and my sister and I to listen to when we would drive from Atlanta to Destin, Florida for our 1 week summer vacation every year in a Volvo station wagon with the luggage carrier on top. So I have vivid memories of those days dreaming about this.
Did your family worry about your obsession with radio?
I don't know that they worried. I think they saw this is something that I'm going to do. Either they get to come on board, or if they don't, I'm going for it anyway. I remember telling my folks, you know, I went to the University of Georgia, and about a year and a half in, I wasn't sleeping. I was so focused on trying to make it in Los Angeles. I thought, I cannot get this out of my system. That's all I think about. I'm obsessed with going for it. I'm going to pack up my stuff. I'm going to get in my Honda. I'm going to go out to Los Angeles. I have to tell my parents I'm dropping out of college. This is not something that they saw coming. Pretty traditional families, you know, Bob. My mom and dad, blessed, they've been married for 50 plus years. And my father is a retired attorney. My mother's the greatest mother in the world. So going to them to say, hey, I'm quitting school and going to LA, where we didn't know anybody, I knew it was going to be a tough one. And they said, well, look, we can tell based on what you're saying that if we're not supportive of this idea, you're going to go anyway. And I said, I think I am. Now, whether or not they thought it would work out, I don't know what they really believed. But I knew when I went out there, I wasn't going to come back until I made it. I didn't want to come home until I could say, at least I've got a job.
You went to LA. Where did you live? You didn't know anybody. Who did you say hello to? How did you start?
So my father was in the Army. One of the guys he kept in touch with had a son who was a teacher in LA. And so my mom says, hey, why don't you call this guy? And if you guys can connect, we feel more comfortable if you would move in with him if he is cool with it and you guys share an apartment together, because we just don't know anybody out there. So anyway, I went out. We stood in line to get tickets to see the Tonight Show with Jay Leno. We watched that. That's when we first met. And we started talking. He said, yeah, we want to split a one bedroom. I'll do it. So we split a one bedroom apartment in Burbank for $375 each. And that's where I started to live.
You're living in this one bedroom apartment with a roommate, and you don't know anybody in LA, and you're going to make it. How do you get into the system? Who on earth did you call? What put your foot in the door?
So at the time when I moved out to Los Angeles, I had been on the air while I was in high school as a part-time DJ at the radio station, the pop station in Atlanta, WSTR, Star 94 FM. And when I moved out to Los Angeles, there was an affiliate of the American Top 40, and somehow I got a name of somebody that was a program director at Star 98.7 in LA. And his name was Randy Lane. And I called Randy Lane and I left a message and I called and called and called. And eventually I did get a call back from him. And I said, look, I was a part-time guy. I just moved out to LA. I was on in Atlanta. I'm just a kid. I'm trying to make it. No problem. Come in. We'll meet. We met. The first shift I did eventually after driving the van around and giving away Tab Clear in drugstore parking lots. Remember that? It was a big promotion for Tab Clear I was doing.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, all right, why don't you do overnights Friday? I think it was like midnight to 5 a.m. Same thing Saturday. So that's what I did. I did overnights. I drove the van and I kept just chipping away and trying to show some ambition in what I wanted to do for a living.
Did you ever think maybe I need to go back to Atlanta?
No. I knew that no matter what or how hard or, you know, sleepless nights, whatever it was going to take, I was going to do something so that I never had to go back and say, I didn't do it. I couldn't do it. I didn't make it. I had real fire, real drive to do something so that I didn't have to go back. Not because I didn't love Atlanta and want to go back, but I wanted to make it. I wanted to be right, right? I wanted the case that I presented to my parents to actually be legitimate.
So you mentioned Merv Griffin and Dick Clark. Dick Clark, I know, was someone you greatly admired, and he was a mentor of yours as well. What did you learn from Dick Clark, and how the hell did you meet Dick Clark?
I cold called Dick Clark when American Idol first started. After the first season, he and Merv, as you said, these guys were guys I looked up to. And I called his office and American Idol had aired. So I figured I'd have a shot at meeting him. And they set a meeting with him. And I went into his offices in Burbank. And, you know, I asked him some questions. And he was extremely focused on the business while being the most congenial guy and making it look so easy on TV. And I'll never forget what he did say to me. He did say to me, okay, so everybody's probably going to think they can do what you do really well. You want people to think that's easy. I could do that, who are watching you. Because if you're making it look that easy, and we all know it's not, you're doing a good job making it seamless and making it comfortable. If it looks difficult and hard, you're not doing a good job. So I remember him telling me that. And he also said you should try and own some things and the shows that you do, really make sure you've got some equity and a piece of them and some control of those. And so I took that, and eventually we established a rapport, and eventually he invited me to come on a co-host with him after his stroke on New Year's Rockin' Eve. The first year, immediately Regis Philbin hosted with, or for Dick, actually. And then after, Dick had me come in and co-host with him. And every year afterwards, he would write me the most beautiful letter about the night and the experience, and just really kind words. So it was an honor to take over for him once I did.
You started your own production company, 2006, and almost immediately had a hit. What took you there? And looking back, what was the most important reason for your success as a producer? How did you make that jump from creative to business person?
This was thinking of the ideas that Merv Griffin, when I sat with him, and Dick Clark, when I sat with him, these were the things that they said to always be on the lookout for. I remember Merv saying, look, once you're on a TV show where people are watching, you can probably get a meeting with executives at different networks to sell an idea. So I remember that. And when we made the production deal, the Kardashians came along pretty fast. I was watching The Osbournes at the time. That was on MTV. And I thought that was brilliant, the way that they were showing the family. And thought, wow, there could be, you know, a real genre for this. And is there another interesting family with a lot of different moving parts and people and things going on that people might want to watch? And at the time, Kris Jenner was thinking about doing a show with the family. And a casting director, Dina Katz, she knew that both of us were in this aligned thinking pattern about this kind of show and this genre, and set up a meeting with the two of us. And Kris Jenner and I had that meeting. And afterwards, we made a deal to go shoot a pilot of The Kardashians. And I, at the time at the production company, didn't own a camera. We didn't have anything, no equipment. So I remember Elliot, who worked for me at the time, he went out and he bought a camera. He went to the Valley, to the Kardashians' house, over a weekend, and he just shot a backyard barbecue. He called me after he shot. He said, I think we've got something here. And of course, we saw it. We put the tape together. I think Kris Jenner still has the pilot tape somewhere. Initially, we pitched it to E, and it didn't stick in the pitch. It was going to go somewhere else. And I remember calling Ted Harbert, who was the president of E at the time, and saying, really think we should try and do this here. And Kris, to her credit, said they are going to let the cameras follow everything. They're going to be vulnerable. That's just the way they're going to treat this. And I made one more push and they bought it. And then what happened was we had to move quick, and we made that show very fast to air, and the rest sort of, well, you know.
And that was your jump to business person.
That was the jump. I think, you know, making, and you're good at this, making a quick decision, right? I mean, I like to digest, but I also have found that sometimes you don't get the opportunity to do that. And if you can make a quick decision, it can pay off.
Philanthropy. You've always been concerned about others. It shows on the air. It's probably what makes you you. Listeners can feel it. But you've also given your time and your money directly to causes that matter to you and move you. Can you tell us a little bit about that, and specifically about the Ryan Seacrest Foundation and what you're doing in pediatric hospitals?
Well, this is something that is my greatest work, and it is something that we are fortunate enough to do. My mom, my dad, my sister, and I at the Ryan Seacrest Foundation, and a great team based out of Nashville now. We have built media centers, TV content centers, radio centers, green screen centers in 15 pediatric hospitals across the country. We're in the lobby of pediatric hospitals everywhere from Boston to Philly to Atlanta and many more to come. And when you walk into the lobby, you'll see this cool area behind the glass. It looks like a studio that we would work in. And it's a place for kids and their families to go to escape. It's the one room in the hospital where they're not given shots. Doctors aren't telling you what you have to do. There's no treatment in there. It's all about escaping and tapping into creativity. And this idea came after I had visited pediatric hospitals around the country and spoken with parents after I met kids in their hospital beds. And I just asked them questions. I said, you know, what do the kids do? What keeps them motivated? What gives them the incentive to get up and walk the hallways or get out of bed when you're going through a tough time? And I listened to what parents had to say. And I thought, okay, what if we could create this center of energy and excitement, essentially an event space where kids and their families would have things to look forward to and they could go participate and they could be the stars. And that's how we developed these Seacrest Studios, where now patients will go into the studio and artists, every artist that we have played on iHeartRadio and movie stars and TV stars have come to these different cities inside the studios, and the patients produce the shows, the patients interview the stars, and the patients broadcast all of it into the hospital rooms, not only in the building that they're in, sometimes in campuses across the country. And that we've seen has helped in the healing process. Some patients call less for pain medication because they're happy, because they've forgotten for a moment what they're going through. And we've had doctors report that to us. So we didn't know what it was going to be and how it was going to have an impact in healing, but it has. And fortunately, we continue to build them.
You're up to 11, soon to have 14. Is that right?
Yeah, we're going to have 14 new ones. A 15th is another one going into Atlanta in their new hospital there. And then we've got two more that we're going to announce real soon.
Well, thank you and congratulations on that. You always wanted to be on the air since you were a kid, and I'm sure you have exceeded your own wildest expectations, but it comes at a price: celebrity and not much privacy. How have you dealt with that?
I have one sort of thought about that. It's everything I ever wanted. If I were doing these jobs and no one came up to me and said hi, then the shows aren't making a real impact. So I love it when anybody walks up to me anywhere and says hello, or hey, I heard you talking about this, or you know what, I'm a big Carrie Underwood fan. I remember the night that she won American Idol. I was with my family. We were in the airport. We were at a bar. I love that. So the deal I made with myself was, whenever I leave my home, I'm out. I'm on, right? Like I'm a little bit of public property. And so if you want to take a picture, if you want to say hello, if you want to chat about something, I'm totally, absolutely fine with it. As a matter of fact, when that stops, then I have a problem. And the other thing, Bob, but we talked about this too. I'm not the star of any of the shows that I do. I put people in the spotlight. I listen to people. I talk to people. I interview people. I debut people. I celebrate people. But I'm not the star. You know, Live with Kelly and Ryan, Kelly Ripa is the star of the show. Wheel of Fortune, The Game and the contestants are the star of the show. American Idol, the judges and the singers are the star of the show. So that's my role. And by having that role, I find that people don't treat me like a star. They treat me like somebody they know. And that's what I want.
Let's jump to some advice. If you could, it was possible, what advice would you give your 15-year-old self, your 21-year-old self, and your 30-year-old self?
Oh, man. So my 15-year-old self, the advice would be to actually do a few things that are fun in school, not just work all around class, right? Like I worked a lot around class in football. My 20s something might be to carry a little less guilt when I wasn't working. As I was saying, even if it were a Sunday morning and I wasn't at the radio station, it's like, why wasn't I there? Why didn't they want me to be there on Sunday? I should be there. You know, so I think about those things throughout the years. And I would tell my, now I'm, I don't want to say, but yeah, now I'm into my 40s. I would tell, you know, my 35, 36, 37, a little more balance. Like, find a hobby. I remember filling out forms, whatever form you're filling out for. And they say, what are your hobbies? And I was like, I need to make something up because I haven't had a chance to do anything like that. So I thought that was a moment where I should try and develop some hobbies.
We end each episode with a shout out to the greats of math and magic in business and marketing. The math person who has an incredibly analytical mind and their success comes from that skill. And the magic person, the promoter, the visionary, the dreamer who achieves success through that path. Who are the two who get your shout outs?
There's one that I didn't meet and one that I met for the math. For the math, the one I wanted to meet would have been Walt Disney. The one that I think about that I did meet is one we spoke about in Dick Clark. And when I think of the magic, and we put Dick and Merv together, I would put Merv in the magic category. He was great at math, but the magic category. He had something special. He had the magic wand. He could just create an atmosphere, an energy, a connection that I was in awe of. And Kris Jenner, we talked about her earlier too. She has it. She has a magic wand. She can do the math. She's very smart with business, but she knows how to create the magic. And I've been blessed with the opportunity to be exposed to these people. But Walt's the one that I would have loved to have met.
Ryan, you are truly a unicorn. You've not only done things no one's ever done before, but you've done them in parallel, not in sequence. And you show no signs of slowing down. Thanks for sharing your stories and insights.
Thank you.
Here are a few things I picked up from my conversation with Ryan. One, have an open line of communication with business partners. Ryan's relationships with brands are true collaborative partnerships. And as a result, advertisers love being on Ryan's show. Enter any business partnership with a clear understanding of their goals. Find out what success means to them and what will move the needle and work together to achieve it. Two, foster and maintain meaningful relationships. People appreciate honesty, kindness, and authenticity in any business. And Ryan is just as genuine as he appears on TV and on the radio. He was able to lean on the connections he formed early in his career, and this is one of the key elements he attributes to his success. Three, make quick decisions. Time and time again, Ryan built his career by making quick decisions. He did not miss the moment. He saw an opening in the reality TV space for the Kardashians before he even owned the camera. Don't be afraid to make a quick decision when you see the opportunity. It may pay off in more ways than you ever imagined. I'm Bob Pittman. Thanks for listening.
That's it for today's episode. Thanks so much for listening to Math and Magic, a production of iHeart Podcasts. The show is hosted by Bob Pittman. Special thanks to Sydney Rosenblum for booking and wrangling our wonderful talent, which is no small feat. Math and Magic's producers are Emily Marinoff and Jessica Kreinchich. It is mixed and mastered by Bahid Frazier. Our executive producers are Nikki Etor and Ali Perry. And of course, a big thanks to Gail, Raul, Eric, Angel, Noel, and everyone who helped bring this show to your ears. Until next time.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how to get comfortable with fear and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern.
People say, what are you afraid of, right? I'm afraid of fear because it's like I want to confront anything in my life that feels challenging on those levels.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get ready for Smart Money Happy Hour. Pull up a chair. It's the happy hour you wish your friends were having.
Mix two money experts with some hot takes and a splash of nostalgia, and you get me, George Camel.
And me, Rachel Cruz, talking unfiltered about what's going on in the world, pop culture, and how to afford a life you love.
We're talking money, celebrity budgets, and my budget for my two French bulldogs. It's a lot.
You'll hear it all on Smart Money Happy Hour. Listen on the iHeart app or wherever you get your podcasts.